Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LeDuc.
I often thought my father was born with music. Some wayward melody that took the form of a man. He heard music everywhere. Squeaking bed springs, buzzing flies, dripping faucets were all filled with rhythm to him. That he was a great jazz pianist was the opinion of Charlie Parker, Lester Young, and scores of others who played with him. I too was in awe of his talent, but I loved him out of all proportion, as only a daughter could.
Joe Albany was a critically acclaimed but little-known jazz pianist, one of the few white musicians to play bebop with Charlie Parker. His story is told in the film Low Down, based on a memoir by Amy Jo Albany, his daughter. The film tells the story of a man torn between his musical ambition, his devotion to his teenage daughter, and his suffocating heroin addiction. On Monday, September 28th at 7 p.m., Amherst Cinema will present a screening of the film, and filmmaker Jeff Price will be there. Welcome to the Roundtable.
Thank you.
How did the story of Joe Albany come to your plate? How did you come to direct this film?
I was a fan of Joe's back when he was the house pianist at a club up near Columbia. You know, Joe was a not very well-known pianist, but he was a pianist of tremendous importance and was part of the L.A. jazz scene in the mid-late 40s when bebop was being invented and when Charlie Parker was in L.A. I don't know, he's kind of like he was a great sort of secret weapon of jazz in the 80s because he was still around and he was still playing authentic bebop. And then years later, I was in Los Angeles, and I was directing a TV commercial and chatting with someone on my crew who was listening to a Chet Baker record. And I mentioned knowing Chet Baker because I filmed also this documentary about Chet Baker called Let's Get Lost. And she said, oh, my dad knew Chet Baker. And I said, oh, how'd your dad know him? She goes, well, he played with him. I said, who's your dad? She goes, I really don't want to say because no one's really ever heard of him. Oh, please. Just say his name. And she said, Joe Albany. And it's like, oh, I love your dad's music. And she was kind of taken back. And she later told me that on only two prior occasions had a non-musician recognized her dad's name. And I guess she just started telling me stories about growing up from that point on. And the stories were so fascinating. And a few years went by and we were making the movie.
And that... Right, obviously, is his daughter, Amy, who Elle Fanning plays in the film.
Right.
And the film does do a beautiful job of showing how important and talented he was, but also a large part of the narrative, of course, is his struggle with addiction. He's a heroin addict. How do you focus, how do you concentrate on how to highlight both of those aspects of his personality and also the fact that it's obvious he very much loved his daughter, but... as most addicts suffer, they can't be there. They aren't there in the right way for their families. How do you put together the story and tell it? And how hard was that, if you don't mind speaking a little bit for Amy, how hard was it for her to piece the story together for the film, too?
Yeah, that was one of the most difficult things because we didn't want to romanticize heroin addiction. There's a real problem in jazz narratives. And heroin was a drug on the jazz scene. It's hard to ignore it. We were telling a story about Joe's life in a very down-and-out time. He hadn't made a record in years at the time of Lowdown. And even though he had this drug addiction, he was still kind of trying to do the best he could do to raise his kid. But nothing ever really came to Joe of any value from drugs. It never helped him as an artist. And I think even Joe would argue that it never helped anyone as an artist. But it's a disease, and we kind of tried to show it that way. You know, the one thing that did happen to Joe, the only good that came of it, is it forced him into exile in Europe, which turned out to be a place that accepted jazz on a much higher artistic plane than the music was accepted in his own country. So this kind of forced exile led to a career resurgence, and Joe got clean when he was in Europe. Later, and this is also in the framework of our film, mm-hmm. he's kind of forced to come home.
Right.
And these big movements of Joe's are always kind of forced. And it was very hard for him at home to stay away from drugs. Drugs are a character in the film. Heroin's kind of a character, sort of an antagonist in the film. The film doesn't have very many conventional sort of romantic film plot threads, but I think the way, you know, heroin's kind of a femme fatale in a way in our film.
I want to talk to you almost as much as you are willing to about John Hawkes, who I love and have loved for years and am always so glad to see him cast and well cast and recognized as he has been increasingly over the last few years, people starting to perk up and notice him more. How did John Hawkes get cast in the movie?
You know, we were prepping this movie for such a long time, and we could never really quite land the person that was capable of embodying Joe. And we did have another cast. We were all in place to do the film a few years prior, and our financing fell through. At that time, we had Mark Ruffalo attached.
Also a wonderful actor, of course.
A great actor, yeah. Another great guy, and really interesting to have worked with Mark and to have seen the character of Joe beginning to take form a little bit with Mark. And then our financing fell through, and Mark had a schedule problem. We needed to recast, and it seemed, you know, daunting to the point of impossible. And then we thought about John, and we also loved John as a character. His roles that he played were less urban in a way.
Right.
But we thought, he's such a great actor. He's going to be, he'll be beautiful with the part. And Amy met him first, and Amy called me and said, there's just something there. Like, there's just something that is my father there. John is such a great artist, and I learned so much working from him. You know, his level of dedication and discipline is so profound. And one of the first things that he said, this is probably going to be the hardest role I've ever played, because the character is the furthest away from who I am as a person. I'm not a heroin addict. I'm not a jazz musician. And I need to really feel that I know the character that I'm playing. It has to be true. I have to find that person. I have to know what I'm doing. This is kind of a, not even central to the way he formed the character, but he did decide he needed to play the piano.
Okay.
To play those piano bars. I mean, he's a musician, he plays guitar, but he's not a jazz musician, and
right.
He's not a pianist. And a very close friend of mine, Ohad Talmor, he's a great jazz musician, a great composer, and a great fan of Joe Albanese and of Amy's writing. And actually, Ohad and I have been talking about this film for years, literally. And years ago, Ohad, seeing the day coming, started to transcribe Joe Albanese solos and kind of organize them on a scale of difficulty to teach.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we would end up one day working with an actor who's a great pianist and it wouldn't be a problem, and maybe we would work with someone that where we were starting from scratch. So this tremendous preparation was in place, and Ohad started working with John on the solos. There wasn't a lot of time. I mean, maybe there was 3 weeks, but John had to do it. He never used a hand double. You know, there's never a trick. It's always really John at the piano. And the first time we shot it, no one knew what was going to happen because we hadn't been there for the piano rehearsals. John was kind of doing this alone with Ohad. And the first time any of us saw it was when we were shooting it. And it's this kind of little party scene, and it was one of the more difficult piano solos. You know, we had to organize it because he wasn't going to learn the whole solo in 3 weeks. He was going to learn the parts we needed to see.
Right.
And this... But it needed to look a little bit like a documentary. So I had to just drift down the camera, which I happened to be operating at the time. I shared that responsibility with the DP, Chris Blauvelt. But it would seem to just drift down to his hands, and Ohad was behind me kind of giving me cues. And every time I'd drift down to his hands, I'd see John's hands, and he's spot on. I mean, he's 100%. And I said, cut. We had gone through an entire take of the song. And I heard this kind of stampede from outside the door, and the door burst open, and it was all the producers that had been watching on the video monitor in the next room who just burst in. They couldn't believe their eyes to applaud the performance. You know, that's just a great example. It's kind of spectacular, but it's an amazing insight into John's devotion and the degree to which he needs to kind of know the space he's occupying. You know, another example is we were doing a similar shot, and I said, John, you know, this is a close-up. It's an extreme close-up. The camera sees about from your lip to your eyebrow. And John's like, Jeff, I need to know exactly what I'm doing. I need to know exactly what my hands are doing, or I can't do it. He was right. It was that kind of dedication to honor Joe by never compromising on his embodying Joe produced this performance that I think is a little uncanny. The last sort of story about it is that Amy Albany, the real Amy Albany, who was very involved in the production of the film and, of course, one of the screenwriters, she was there every day on the set, and she would kind of see her dad come and go in the performance. But, you know, you shoot a film, and it is mosaic pieces. It's very hard to see the film on the set. The first time we showed Amy the film assembled, afterwards she said, I don't know how it happened. I saw things of my father that no one knew but me. And now, you know, if it's magic or not, I think when you're an artist as great as John, and you're an artist that's that great because your devotion and your discipline is that great, magic things really happen.
You've told us how he learned to play piano for the role. How does he learn to act like he is on heroin? What kind of research goes into that? Is that something that you have to work with him on, or is it research he has to do on his own too?
Well, there's no research, you know. It's
not it's, trying the drug, obviously,
yeah,
research. But
and I will say that this is what was the most difficult thing for John. John hated shooting those scenes. He hated it because he hated what the character was doing. And he also hated it in a technical way because it was so hard for him to know if he was doing it correctly. There was one take where he was, you know, kind of trying to get a vein to come up, and he was hitting his arm, and you know, as you see in the kind of cliche scene, you can imagine kind of slapping the vein a little bit, and he was hitting himself very hard. And it was outside of the kind of cliche of what you see. And afterwards, I said, John, I did notice that kind of very strong choice you made about slapping your vein. He said, and actually, I was nervous. I didn't know why he was doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, because I hated myself at that moment. And I realized, of course, that's the most brilliant thing to do. And he's right to not do what we expected of him to do. The issue of heroin has come up now. You asked about it, and it's interesting in the performance. It's a very difficult thing to deal with, I think, in a narrative. And one of the things we decided right from the start was to never show it, to kind of see heroin from the perspective of Amy,
mm-hmm.
so that, in a way, Joe Albany, the father, is protecting Amy from that debased way of witnessing, you know, his life. And at the same time, through Amy, the audience benefits from that same protection.
The film is executive produced by Anthony Kiedis and Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers, and Flea is also an actor in the film. How did that come about?
Producing an independent film is a very funny procedure. And, you know, at the beginning of it, because you're looking for financing, and this sort of hunt for financing is very in parallel with all the other sort of creative oddball things you end up doing.
Right.
And we had heard somewhere that, oh, that in Europe, the film would take on a kind of value if some of our casting was unusual, if we had kind of maybe interesting musicians in the cast. And I got real nervous about that. I'm so crazy about jazz and the history of it and the way we were going to portray the history of jazz, and it was such a important thing to me to get that right and to be as respectful as a person could possibly be on the topic. I was just wondering how it would be possible to look for a popular musician to fit in somehow with this movie. And I mentioned it to Amy, and Amy was like, instantaneously said, oh, it's got to be Flea. We should get Flea, of course, for the role of Hobbs. Amy and Flea grew up kind of in the same neighborhood, and they grew up in the same social group. They didn't know each other. They had had a few run-ins that Flea didn't remember, but Amy remembered very well.
Sure.
In some, like, you know, Flea chasing her around the Mayfair Market, you know, trying to get her to see the very first Chili Peppers concert that was in the high school, things like that. But Flea didn't realize that. But Amy knew that that his stepdad was a jazz musician, a very good bass player, who, for reasons, you know, that relate to Joe's difficulties, also had a career that was never recorded. Oh, and then Flea, before he wanted to be a rock star, wanted to be a jazz musician and wanted to be a trumpet player, which is how the character of Hobbs was written. So Flea just seemed perfect, and we sent him the script, but we didn't say anything about the personal connection or even the personal proximity. And he got back to us and he said, "This movie furthers the cause of jazz being recognized as an art form. I'll do anything to help it be made." You know, we had a meeting and he realized that he and Amy kind of were so close in their childhood experiences, and then they became very close. So he became very emotionally attached to the production and devoted to it and a champion of it, to the point where he was willing to bring Anthony in and for them both to take a role as executive producers.
Also in the cast are Peter Dinklage and Glenn Close, and we haven't even gotten to discuss them yet. But luckily, there is a screening of Lowdown at Amherst Cinema on Monday at 7 p.m., and so people can check out the film there, and then they'll just find out the rest for themselves.
I'll be there, too.
Of course. Jeff, thank you so much for taking the time. Have a wonderful day, and
thank you so much.
Congratulations on the film.
Oh, thank you so much. What a pleasure.
Jeff Price will be on hand at a screening of his film Low Down at Amherst Cinema in Amherst, Massachusetts on Monday, September 28th at 7 p.m. For more information, visit amherstcinema.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.